When Daniel Tammet memorized 22,514 digits of pi and learned Icelandic in just 2 weeks, neuroscientists took notice. Despite his extraordinary abilities, Tammet has autism and synesthesia. He perceives numbers as colors and shapes. This paradox, exceptional mental abilities coexisting with cognitive limitations, sits at the heart of intelligence research. Richard J. Heyer's groundbreaking book, The Neuroscience of Intelligence, has become a cornerstone text in cognitive neuroscience, consistently ranking among Amazon's top sellers in brain science. Cited in over 500 academic papers since publication, it's become required reading in neuroscience programs worldwide. The book challenges popular misconceptions about intelligence while presenting compelling evidence that our cognitive abilities are fundamentally rooted in our biology. What makes this work particularly fascinating is how it bridges the gap between abstract psychological concepts and concrete brain mechanisms, offering a glimpse into what might someday allow us to enhance human intelligence itself. What exactly is intelligence? We intuitively recognize when someone is exceptionally bright or struggles cognitively, but defining intelligence scientifically requires more precision. Intelligence isn't just specific skills or academic knowledge, it's a general mental capability involving reasoning, problem-solving, abstract thinking, and quick learning. The structure of mental abilities follows a hierarchical pattern that psychologists have mapped through decades of research. When people take various cognitive tests, their performances correlate positively. Those who excel at one mental test tend to perform well on others. This relationship forms a three-level pyramid with specific ability tests at the bottom, broader factors like reasoning and spatial ability in the middle, and at the apex, the general factor of intelligence, or G factor. This G factor, first described by Charles Spearman over a century ago as the positive manifold, explains why someone good at one mental task is likely, though not guaranteed, to perform well on others. Factor analysis reveals that reasoning tests have the strongest relationship to G, 0.96, followed by spatial ability, vocabulary, and memory. Alternative models offer complementary perspectives. One widely used approach identifies two core factors: crystallized intelligence, knowledge acquisition based on experience, seen in savants, and fluid intelligence, reasoning for novel problem solving, associated with figures like Einstein. Fluid intelligence correlates highly with G and slowly declines with age, while crystallized intelligence remains relatively stable throughout life. What's fascinating is how these abstract psychological concepts connect to concrete brain mechanisms. Unlike savants who demonstrate remarkable but isolated abilities, or IBM's Watson, which excels at specific tasks without demonstrating general intelligence, most people possess varying degrees of both G and independent abilities, with different patterns of strengths and weaknesses across mental domains. This variation isn't just statistical, it reflects real differences in how our brains process information. Intelligence testing began with a practical goal: identifying children who needed special education. Alfred Binet and Theodore Simon created the first test to objectively distinguish between children with genuine cognitive limitations and those with behavioral issues. They measured a child's mental age across various subtests, which William Stern then divided by chronological age and multiplied by 100 to create the IQ score. Modern tests like the Stanford-Binet and the Wechsler Adult Intelligence Scale, WISE, now use deviation scores based on the normal distribution rather than mental age. Crucially, IQ scores are meaningful only relative to peers, not as absolute measures like distance or volume. The WISE includes 10 core subtests and 5 supplemental ones that sample a broad range of mental abilities. Beyond individually administered IQ tests, other assessments can be given in group settings. Tests with high G loading effectively measure general intelligence through complex reasoning. Three important examples are Raven's Advanced Progressive Matrices, a timed nonverbal test of abstract pattern recognition, analogy tests, and the SAT, which correlates strongly with G because its problems require reasoning. Despite persistent myths, intelligence tests aren't biased in the technical sense. If a test predicts outcomes equally well across different populations, it's not biased despite mean differences. Decades of research show intelligence tests predict academic success regardless of socioeconomic status, age, sex, or race. These scores also correlate with measurable brain characteristics like cortical thickness and cerebral glucose metabolism. Have you ever wondered why we can't say someone with an IQ of 140 is twice as intelligent as someone with a 70 IQ? The fundamental limitation of intelligence testing is that IQ scores aren't on a ratio scale. They have no true zero point, unlike measurements like weight or distance. Instead, these scores represent percentiles. 140 places someone in the top 1%, while 70 represents the bottom 2%. This means IQ scores only estimate intelligence relative to others, not as an absolute quantity. Despite measurement limitations, intelligence tests demonstrate remarkable predictive validity across multiple domains. IQ scores strongly predict general learning ability, with different ranges corresponding to different capabilities. People with IQs around 70 typically require concrete, step-by-step instruction and struggle with complex material. Those with IQs between 80-90 need explicit, structured teaching. Learning from written materials generally requires IQs of at least 100, while college-level learning works best at 115 and above. In the workplace, IQ scores predict job performance, particularly for complex occupations. The G factor predicts success more than any other cognitive ability in complex jobs. U.S. Air Force studies found G predicted virtually all variants in pilot performance. Lower IQs are sufficient for routine jobs with minimal complex reasoning, while positions like police officer or bank teller typically require IQs around 100. Professions like teaching and accounting generally need IQs of at least 115. Perhaps most striking is how intelligence impacts everyday functioning. Statistical comparisons between low IQ, 75 to 90, and high IQ, 110 to 125, reveal dramatic differences in life outcomes. Those in the lower group are 133 times more likely to drop out of high school, 10 times more likely to receive chronic welfare, 7.5 times more likely to be incarcerated, and even experience nearly triple the traffic fatality rate, possibly reflecting poorer risk assessment abilities. Three classic longitudinal studies dramatically demonstrate the predictive power of childhood intelligence tests. Terman's 1920s California study followed 1,470 children with IQs of 135 to 196, disproving stereotypes that highly intelligent people were physically or socially stunted. They were actually more robust, happier, and better adjusted than controls. The study of mathematically and scientifically precocious youth at Johns Hopkins identified junior high students with exceptional math abilities through SATM scores. Like Terman subjects, these students showed greater physical and emotional maturity than peers, with personalities more resembling college students despite their young age. The nature-nurture debate about intelligence has raged for decades, but the scientific evidence now points strongly in one direction. When Arthur Jensen published his controversial 1969 article suggesting intelligence was largely heritable, he faced fierce criticism from both academic circles and the public. Yet subsequent research, including extensive twin studies, molecular genetics, and longitudinal analyses, has largely validated his core hypotheses about genetic influence on intelligence and the limited impact of environmental interventions on IQ. Twin studies provide some of the most compelling evidence for genetic influences. Studies of identical twins reared apart consistently find correlations around 0.75 for intelligence test scores, remarkably close to the 0.86 correlation for identical twins raised together. These findings suggest approximately 70 to 75% of intelligence variance is genetic and 25 to 30% is not. The Minnesota study of twins reared apart, which followed 137 pairs of twins over 20 years, provided particularly robust evidence for genetic influence, showing remarkable similarities in cognitive abilities, even among twins who had never met. A critical discovery is that heritability of intelligence increases with age, from about 40% in young twins, 4 to 6 years old, to approximately 85% in older adults. The Dutch twin study confirmed this pattern longitudinally, tracking over 800 twin pairs from childhood to adulthood, showing heritability increasing from 26% at age 5 to over 80% by age 18. Meanwhile, shared environmental influences, family, neighborhood, schools, peak at age 5 and decrease to nearly zero by age 16, while non-shared environmental influences, such as unique experiences, peer groups, and random events, remain present throughout life. What does this mean practically? Enriching childhood family experiences, while beneficial for many reasons, may not have lasting effects on intelligence development. By adulthood, genetic factors dominate the landscape of intelligence differences. This doesn't mean environment is irrelevant, severe deprivation can still impair cognitive development, but rather that within the normal range of environments in developed countries, genetic differences explain most variation in intelligence. Recent large-scale studies, including genome-wide association studies, GWAS, involving hundreds of thousands of participants, support what researchers call the continuity hypothesis. The same genetic and environmental factors influence intelligence across the entire distribution. High intelligence, top 5%, appears to be simply the quantitative extreme of the same genetic factors responsible for normal variation, not the result of different genes or environmental factors. This finding has important implications for understanding exceptional ability and talent development. The emerging field of polygenic scoring, which examines thousands of genetic variants simultaneously, is beginning to predict educational achievement and cognitive ability with increasing accuracy. These advances are revealing intelligence to be influenced by many genes of small effect rather than a few genes of large effect, a pattern consistent with other complex human traits. Before neuroimaging, the brain was essentially a black box. Researchers could only speculate about its inner workings. The development of PET, positron emission tomography, and later MRI, magnetic resonance imaging technology, revolutionized intelligence research by allowing scientists to observe the living brain in action. The first PET study of intelligence in 1988 produced a surprising finding: negative correlations between test scores and brain activity. Subjects with the highest scores showed the lowest activity in relevant brain areas. This counterintuitive discovery suggested that intelligence might be related to brain efficiency rather than raw processing power. This efficiency hypothesis was tested further in a Tetris learning study, where participants were scanned before and after 50 days of practice. Despite playing at much higher levels, brain scans showed decreased activity after practice, supporting the idea that the brain becomes more efficient with learning by determining which areas not to use. But not all brains work the same way. A PET study with college students grouped by gender and SAT math scores found that high math ability men showed greater temporal lobe activity during problem solving, opposite of the efficiency hypothesis, while women with equivalent math abilities showed no systematic relationship between brain activity and mathematical reasoning. Despite solving identical problems equally well, men and women appeared to use different brain networks. By 2000, MRI technology rapidly supplanted PET scanning for intelligence research. Unlike PET, which required radioactive tracers, MRI used magnetic fields to produce detailed images without radiation exposure. Early MRI studies confirmed the long-debated relationship between brain size and intelligence with unprecedented precision, establishing an average correlation of 0.33 between whole brain volume and intelligence test scores. As imaging technology advanced, researchers could analyze gray and white matter with millimeter precision. Studies in children revealed that cortical thickness correlations with IQ followed a dynamic developmental pattern, with high IQ children showing accelerated cortical thickening followed by vigorous thinning by adolescence. In adults, research found gray matter correlations with IQ distributed across all four lobes in both hemispheres, with striking sex differences. After reviewing all 37 brain imaging intelligence studies published through 2006, researchers identified brain areas common across at least 50% of studies, primarily in parietal and frontal regions. The resulting parieto-frontal integration theory, PFIT, proposed a distributed network underlying intelligence, with information flowing through four distinct processing stages: sensory perception in posterior regions, memory integration in temporal and parietal areas, frontal lobe decision-making, and motor speech execution through the primary motor cortex. Each stage builds upon the previous one, creating a hierarchical processing system that underlies complex cognitive tasks. This model suggests individuals may engage different area combinations while achieving similar intelligence levels, explaining how two people with identical IQs might excel in different domains, one perhaps showing superior mathematical ability while another demonstrates exceptional verbal skills. Individual differences in intelligence likely stem from variations in gray matter volume in key areas, white matter connectivity between regions, and overall information flow efficiency. Studies have shown that up to 30% of individual differences in cognitive ability can be attributed to brain volume variations, particularly in frontal and parietal regions. Recent advances in connectivity assessment, particularly through diffusion tensor imaging and functional MRI, have dramatically improved our ability to test these hypotheses. Graph analysis provides a mathematically sophisticated approach to determine how every voxel, node, in the brain correlates with all others and the strength of these connections, edges. Brain networks tend to be small world connections, where most connectivity clusters around adjacent areas or neighborhoods, while rich clubs connect more distant regions through interconnected hubs. These rich clubs act as central communication stations, facilitating rapid information transfer across different brain regions. Studies using graph analysis have found that higher IQ scores correlate with shorter pathways, indicating greater efficiency of information transmission within the entire brain, with frontal parietal connections showing the strongest correlations. White matter integrity studies support these findings, with research showing that 10% of variance in intelligence test scores could be explained by a general factor of global white matter integrity. The quality and speed of these connections appear particularly crucial in tasks requiring working memory and abstract reasoning. The efficiency hypothesis has evolved into a complex set of issues involving multiple brain networks. Recent studies distinguish between task-positive areas, where activation increased during performance, and task-negative areas, where activation decreased during cognitive tasks. In task-positive networks, higher intelligence related to less efficiency, suggesting more cognitive resources are recruited for complex problem-solving, while in task-negative networks, higher intelligence related to greater efficiency, indicating better suppression of irrelevant brain activity. This dual pattern suggests that intelligence relies not just on the ability to engage relevant brain regions, but also on the capacity to inhibit unnecessary neural activity. Research has also revealed that these networks show remarkable plasticity, with evidence that targeted cognitive training can enhance connectivity patterns and potentially improve cognitive performance. This understanding has important implications for educational and therapeutic interventions aimed at optimizing cognitive function across the lifespan. The convergence of genetic research and advanced neuroimaging techniques has revolutionized our understanding of intelligence's biological foundations. Twin studies utilizing magnetic resonance imaging have revealed intricate patterns of genetic influence across different brain regions. The genetic contribution to gray matter volume shows remarkable variation throughout the brain, with particularly strong genetic effects observed in the frontal and parietal lobes, areas crucial for higher-order cognitive functions. These studies demonstrated a statistically significant correlation between IQ scores and frontal lobe gray matter volume, providing compelling evidence that individual differences in intelligence are substantially influenced by inherited brain structure characteristics. Groundbreaking research from Dutch scientists further illuminated this relationship, discovering that the correlation between gray matter volume and general intelligence was almost entirely attributable to genetic factors. Environmental influences showed surprisingly little impact on this relationship. Their comprehensive studies expanded these findings to include multiple brain components, revealing that gray matter, white matter, and cerebellar volumes were all genetically linked to working memory capacity through shared genetic mechanisms. Additionally, they found that processing speed, a fundamental component of intelligence, showed specific genetic connections to white matter volume, suggesting different aspects of cognitive ability may have distinct genetic underpinnings. The investigation of white matter integrity using diffusion tensor imaging, DTI, in twin populations has yielded particularly revealing results. The highest heritability values were consistently found in the frontal and parietal regions, with specific white matter fiber tracts showing direct correlations with IQ scores. This relationship demonstrated interesting demographic variations. Genetic influence appeared more pronounced in adolescents than in adults, showed greater effects in males compared to females, and was particularly strong in individuals from higher socioeconomic backgrounds and those with above-average IQ scores. The field has now progressed to combining sophisticated neuroimaging techniques with detailed genetic analyses to identify specific genes that influence brain connectivity and intelligence. A particularly noteworthy discovery involved the Val-MET polymorphism associated with brain-derived neurotrophic factor. This variation appears to influence intellectual capability indirectly by modulating white matter development patterns. In an extensive study involving 472 twins and siblings, researchers employed DTI scanning alongside comprehensive DNA analysis to identify a network of 14 genes specifically related to white matter integrity in major brain tracts. The fractional anisotropy, FA, measurements in certain white matter network hubs showed significant correlations with IQ scores, suggesting these genes play crucial roles in developing the neural architecture that supports intelligence. These findings are now driving new research directions, including investigations into how these genetic factors interact with environmental influences and how they might contribute to various cognitive disorders. The identification of specific genetic markers related to brain structure and intelligence opens potential pathways for understanding developmental disorders and possibly developing targeted interventions for cognitive enhancement. Despite widespread interest in cognitive enhancement, claims of dramatic IQ increases are often naive, wrong, or misrepresentations. The Mozart effect became a cultural phenomenon after a 1993 letter in Nature claimed listening to Mozart's music temporarily increased spatial IQ by 8 points. Despite modest experimental design and temporary effects, this sparked widespread enthusiasm, with parents and schools investing in classical music to boost intelligence. Scientific scrutiny eventually dismantled the claim, with comprehensive meta-analyses showing minimal effects that disappeared when unpublished negative studies were included. Similarly, a 2008 study claimed that training on a difficult working memory task produced dramatic improvement in fluid intelligence. Despite methodological flaws, the authors boldly concluded their finding was landmark evidence that fluid intelligence could be improved through training. 8 years later, the weight of evidence finds essentially no transfer effects from memory training to intelligence scores, truly independent of the training method. Given that intelligence has a strong basis in neurobiology, drugs that target specific neurotransmitters might enhance intelligence. Despite countless internet claims about IQ-boosting drugs and widespread use of psychostimulants for cognitive enhancement, well-designed research studies don't strongly support such use. Currently, there is no compelling scientific evidence for an effective IQ pill. Several technologies that alter brain processes show potential for enhancing cognition. Transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS, transcranial direct current stimulation, TDCS, and transcranial alternating current stimulation, TACS, target specific brain areas with magnetic fields or mild electric current. Two studies showed TACS might enhance fluid intelligence. One found gamma band stimulation improved performance on difficult Raven's matrices items, while another found theta band stimulation to the left parietal lobe improved performance on difficult fluid intelligence test items. Despite numerous provocative claims and intriguing findings, there is no substantial evidence supporting any method for enhancing intelligence. The most promising path may be genetic, particularly if many intelligence-related genes work through a common neurobiological pathway that could be targeted. New genetic engineering technologies like CRISPR-Cas9 could theoretically provide enhancement possibilities once intelligence genes are better understood. Intelligence research faces a fundamental measurement problem. While we have sophisticated neuroimaging and genetic tools, we still rely on psychometric tests that use imprecise interval scales. The solution may lie in chronometrics, measuring intelligence through information processing speed. Since time is a ratio scale, someone completing mental tasks in 4 seconds would be literally twice as fast as someone taking 8 seconds. Animal studies provide intriguing bridges to human intelligence research. Studies of genetically diverse mice show striking parallels to human intelligence research, revealing positive correlations between performance on various tasks, with a single factor accounting for 38% of variance across animals. This G factor in mice demonstrates intelligence is not uniquely human. Revolutionary techniques like fluorescent proteins that light up neurons and synapses allow researchers to map neural circuits and track neurochemical signals. Artificial intelligence development has largely progressed without substantial neuroscience input, but a more ambitious approach seeks to create intelligent machines based on actual brain circuits. Neuromorphic chip technology aims to build microchips based on neurocircuitry, with some already enhancing hearing and vision. Large collaborative research programs are mapping brain structure and function at the neurocircuit level, potentially informing our understanding of individual differences in intelligence. The relationship between socioeconomic status and intelligence presents a critical, confounding problem in research. Studies consistently show that intelligence predicts outcomes even after controlling for SES. The term neuro-SES describes the portion of socioeconomic status confounded with the genetic aspects of intelligence, while neuro-poverty refers to poverty partially rooted in the neurobiology of intelligence. This perspective suggests that approximately 51 million Americans with IQs below 85 face economic challenges partly due to neurobiological factors beyond their control. Many questions about intelligence remain unanswered, including brain development mechanisms in childhood, neural networks underlying G factor, potential sex differences, and epigenetic influences. We need advanced methods to understand intelligence at circuit, neuron, and synapse levels, and to determine how research findings can inform education and public policy. Neuroscience offers the best hope to resolve pressing education and policy issues that have persisted despite decades of attempts based on blank slate assumptions.